keep it here.
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to get going. Hi, my name is Stephanie Ferguson, and I am general manager of a group called Integrated Marketing in Microsoft's cloud and server business, and I will be your moderator this afternoon. I want to thank you for coming. We are thrilled to have a group this size here to network and have some interesting dialogue. I want to applaud the number of men I see in the audience. Nice job, guys.
Nice job.
So a little context for what we're doing today. We picked the topic of change because it's such a rich, rich topic. If we think about change, it's the norm today. Businesses who adapt to change, who actually drive change in some instances, are the businesses that thrive. In the world we live in, the technology world, we enable change, we respond to change, we drive change with what we do. And if we think about our careers, it kind of goes back to the point that I made on business. Those of us who are able to navigate change well, those of us who are able to determine when we should instigate change, tend to do better in our careers. So we thought, what a great rich topic. The way we'll approach it today is we'll talk about some of those different aspects. So where does change happen and what do we do about it? What are some examples? What are some questions? And then when have we initiated change? Why did we do that? What were some techniques? So we're going to go at it from both angles. And I want this to be very, very interactive. I will start off by prompting our fabulous panel with some questions, but I want to get you folks moving right away with asking questions or prompting. So let me begin by asking the panel to each introduce themselves, and I'll ask them to tell us who they are, what they do, and actually prompt us by talking just briefly, mentioning a change that they've been a part of recently. Maybe they've driven it, maybe they're working through it. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to you, Claire.
My name is Claire Henry. My team does the technical product marketing for Windows Server and System Center with a primary focus of the data center. And so we are really, and you'll hear, I think, Natalia speak about this, we are really changing fundamentally the way we bring products to market and talk to them, and that is an integrated approach. So a year ago, my role was System Center. Now my role is Windows Server and System Center. This is really good, by the way, but imagine the amount of teching up I've had to do. When Mike Schutz looked at me, I'm like, ooh, I haven't touched a server in 10 years. What is this thing called RDMA? I don't understand that. What's NUMA? So I really had to start taking some, you know, really thinking about teching up. And so that's still a change I'm navigating and working through, surrounded by phenomenal people.
I'm Natalia Matskavichis, and I manage an organization called the Partner and Customer Ecosystem Team. So we do product planning, then partner engineering, some co-engineering, co-development, and then work with customers to understand their needs to bring that into the product lifecycle. So as Claire mentioned, in the last year or so, we've really gone through some organizational changes combining a lot of the Windows Server and System Center. I actually came from the opposite side of Claire, where I came from the server and cloud division. So I know a lot about server. I didn't know as much about System Center, but I expanded my team to really look at the ecosystem for server and System Center. As part of that, I'm also looking at how do we manage through continuous planning and be more flexible and adapt to some of that change.
I'm Jonavie Ford, and I'm a program manager on the Virtual Machine Manager team. I own the areas of monitoring, so the integration with Operations Manager and the extensibility story for that. And like the two ladies before me, part of this change that's happened in our world has been shorter ship cycles, which you guys have been hearing about, System Center shipping at the same time as server. And so navigating that and figuring out how do we plan best for that, how do we deliver features in that context when we're used to having perhaps a little bit more time has been something I've been working on recently.
My name is Cecilia Cole. I'm a program manager in the Windows Server and Cloud Division. One of the biggest changes I had, particularly in my career, is being from a feature PM, somebody that manages a particular feature, a particular product within Microsoft, to drive processes changes, especially when you don't have the authority on a particular team. So I manage the Windows Server Manageability tenant, which is basically defining what makes a feature or a product manageable and serviceable. And what basically what you'll be using is what makes it what I drive, what the technologies are, what we need to implement, what the requirements are. And I work with 90 plus feature teams that I have no relationship whatsoever. And I have to convince them to invest in this story, even though I have no concept of what they really do, and they don't know me, and for them it's a tax. So how do I try to sell what I'm trying to offer to them and try to convince them that this is the right choice and that we're basically, as long as we are all invested in this particular matter, we make our products better for you?
Hi, I'm Lavanya Krishnan. I've been with Microsoft for 11 years now. I've done a various different set of roles within Microsoft, and starting from being a dev to test to a program manager. Changing to program management role has been very recent. I currently own the engineering side of Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track Solutions. So in this role, I get to work with a lot of different partners, customers, Windows Server and System Center teams within Microsoft. It's been a very good change, very good learning experience, and it's very exciting to come to work every day to, you know, interact with customers and find out what they need and try to get that implemented.
Well, thanks, panel. I'd like to start off with a question that we collected and ask a couple of you to respond to it. So when you think about your life and your career, think through what has been possibly the most transformational change you've had to work your way through, the most, you know, profound change. And I'd like you to share that and talk a little bit about how you navigated it, maybe some of your learnings. Why don't we start with you, Cecilia?
Well, I come from a startup background, and as we can see, the coworkers that I had from the engineering teams were predominantly, if not all, male. And that happened in three different companies, three different startups that I worked at. When I came to Microsoft, it was the first time that I ever had engineering colleagues, female engineering colleagues. And I didn't know how to communicate with them because they communicate very differently. I didn't know how to handle, one, the relationship and how to say, you know, how to drive without having to be too coercive. So there are two types of people that I really found. And one of them one group of people would come to me and say, well, I always get nagged at for being too passive, for not leading or not influencing and being more manlike. And there was the other group of women that I interacted with that would be the other extreme, that would be basically the feedback that they got was, I am basically being too strong and I'm coming too strong and I'm being a little bit, and I'm not gonna say the word, but you know. So it was trying to find balance in how I communicate with those two type of people that I found, two type of female coworkers that I found, in trying to not be too or condescending at all with the group that was being told to be passive, and the other group by not being, well, but start working together and trying to communicate better, and instead of trying to take the other woman in the room down. So it was something like I had to learn basically to reset my expectations and learn to have relationships with my coworker and learn to communicate better. I think that brought a lot of change to my personal style of basically at work or at home, to try to be more of a person that would understand my coworker and see where they are coming from. What is that the other person is trying to say? I think that helped me a lot in my career within Microsoft, and I am very grateful that I had the chance to meet these women.
Thank you. Jonabee, I think you also have a good story here to share.
So So I actually, similar, started at a company that was a startup that had actually just been acquired by IBM. And then shortly after it was acquired, the dot-com crash happened, as I'm sure many of you remember. And we were forcibly integrated on an accelerated schedule. And what this meant was that we essentially went through so many reorgs over the course of a year that I had 1 year where I had 5 different managers in the same year. And I was never on the same product for more than 1 release of a product. So I was constantly moving from product to product, getting new managers, having to ramp up on the technology and the teams that I ended up on. And one of the things that I really learned from that is when you move into a new role, figuring out rapidly sort of what the informal org chart is. You know, there's sort of the people who are officially in power, and then there's those certain people that you know, if you go to them and you convince them of an idea, that things will happen. And that was really helpful when I came to Microsoft. I've had actually 2 significant changes that I institute on my own. So one was I moved into a people manager role, and again, that informal org chart and being able to ramp up on things quickly was just really valuable. And then I later moved into the program manager role. I actually started in documentation. And when I moved into the program manager role, again, sort of figuring out how to get my feet under me and how to get things moving quickly was really a valuable lesson.
Natalia, you want to tell us about your big change?
So let me tell you about my change. My change is probably a little bit more extreme than most people would want to do. Usually they say there's some big life changes that you have in your life. So the first one being birth of a child. There's also marriage. There's moving and buying a new house. There's taking on a new job. And then, of course, there's death. So I do not recommend doing more than one at a time. I actually had a time in my career when I was working for a smaller company, a CRM vendor, that was trying to be jack of all trades to everyone. So they were multi-platform, heterogeneous environments. And I was pregnant with my son. So towards the end of my pregnancy, it became very clear to me that the working dynamics were not maybe what I wanted once I started a family. And my last trimester, I think there were 4 or 5 days in a row where they had me work all night to look at perf and scale and doing some software development. Not the best environment when you want to start a family. So I actually made a big life decision. I decided that that career choice wasn't the right one for me, and I made prioritize some changes. So I decided I was going to move closer to family. I decided I was going to change jobs to have a better work-life balance or work-life integration, however you want to talk about it. So as my child was being born, I was in the hospital. That day, I signed papers for a new home and purchased a new home and also actually took on a new job and actually signed a new job. It was probably the best decision of my life. 3 days after I got home from the hospital with my son, I started still getting calls from that last company like at midnight or 2 in the morning asking for help for some other things. So I learned a lot through that. I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. One life change is enough. But I did learn a lot. I learned a lot about prioritizing what's important for my life and understanding what my thresholds were as well. When I was single, when I didn't have kids or a family, it was much easier to roll up my sleeves and be available at the beck and call of that company. But as I started looking at what was more important to me, I made trade-offs. I understood what my thresholds were, I understood what those trade-offs needed to be, and I knew I needed to be by the rest of my family for support. So again, major changes, but I think that was probably the biggest one I've had.
That's a great story, and I think you're pointing out that you can't compare the changes that you may thrust yourself into against a false status quo.
Right.
Your status quo had become unbearable,
correct?
Right? So great call. So the other aspect of this, and you kind of led us there, is what about a time when you initiated change? You made the call, and how did you navigate it? And also, what were maybe some of the thought processes you had as you drove into that change? Lavanya, why don't we start with you on that?
Yeah, so this is kind of the right time for me to talk about it. A couple of reasons, because just like Natalia mentioned, the time that I instigated major changes in my life was when I had my baby and decided to make a career change as well. And I have to mention this here, Natalia is my mentor. So,
you can see my influence.
she did warn me about what I have to go through in the process, but she helped me throughout giving valuable advice. And I think I would like to share a couple of what worked for me here. Again, same thing, I was a test lead at Microsoft. I had a team of 10 people reporting to me when I had my baby. Work life was not easy to maintain. I had a team I was responsible for. At the same time, when I was on maternity leave, I actually did get an offer for this job, the program management job. I was very passionate about. I've been waiting for such an opportunity for many years, where I get to work with, you know, end customers and different product teams. So I just couldn't say no, and I decided to make the change. And that's when, one thing that really helped me was, when you have a baby, you have to make a lot of personal choices, a lot of career choices. You have to start over in terms of setting priorities. I used to sit up and work at 2 a.m. in the night. I just couldn't do it later, right? And when you're in a team, you're working, you already set precedence for your work habits, and it's kind of set. Just like Natalia mentioned, you'll just get calls at the middle of the night, for one-on-one meetings and stuff, and you just can't say no after a point when you've proven yourself to do that. So I figured that this probably is the best time for me to make a change, because it's going to be a new job. I could set the expectations from the beginning. And I was able to set more organized work style, work expectations. Now people knew what to expect from me at home, at work, and that really worked very well.
So. Thanks. Claire, would you like to give us a little example of what you've initiated?
Yeah, mine is similar, having to do with work-life balance and thinking about different strategies for moving through your career. I had 2 children, and surprise, surprise, I'm pregnant again. That's nice. I didn't close that chapter of my life, but surprise, surprise, it was twins. So all of a sudden, I had 4 kids, and I was thinking I was a 2-kid family, and whoa, okay. So that went well, and I was in Microsoft sales, so I was in the field. I'm from Seattle, so I had some major Pacific Northwest companies. I was calling on Boeing, calling on Costco, calling on Nordstrom. And it was fun, and it was time of, the beginning of the .com. Really great things were happening, and my manager, great gentleman, Gary Cox, came to me and goes, I need you to take Starbucks, it's a big opportunity. I go, no, and he goes, what are you talking about? You're not taking Starbucks? This is like great opportunity. And I said, that's too much. I really want to be connected with a customer as they implement our technology. I want to see it through. And he goes, you should be in consulting then. I go, oh, I'm not technical enough. And he goes, no, I need you in consulting. So imagine, if anybody from Nordstrom in the audience? Okay. Oh, yay, all right. So imagine on Friday, I'm in downtown next to the SAM building, and I am your account rep. Monday, you're paying for me. So that was a huge transition. I went from sales to consulting, and I stayed with Nordstrom for about 4.5 years as a consultant, an enterprise strategy consultant, and it was awesome. And I think what I learned from that is a couple of things. At the time, with consulting, you had a certain number of hours where you just had to study on your own. You had to go out and build servers. You had to learn the technology so I could always be at least an hour ahead of the customer. But I could do that at home, and I could do a lot of that work at home, and it also kind of taught my kids some interesting stories. So we would have homework hour, and we would be sitting there, and I would be studying, and they would be studying, and then we would have deer time, drop everything and read time, where you had to throw your homework away and everybody climb up on the king-size bed and just relax. So it really taught us as a family how to make sure we stayed focused but also connect. And as a surprise, surprise, it was probably one of the best career choices I've ever made because, first of all, thank you, Nordstrom. They were a really great customer. We got to bring Nordstrom.com to market. We got to do point-of-sale system. It was just amazing. I think I recognize you, too. And it was just amazing. So thank you very much. But also, it opened up so many further opportunities for me. I got to go do an engineering role, and now I get to do technical marketing. So it was just great.
Thanks. Okay. Natalia, you have a little different story here,
I think. Different story, more from a business perspective. So as you probably have all seen, we've kind of switched to a faster cadence in this release. And the market dynamics are changing. They're very rapid. The competition is changing very rapidly. So in my group, since we manage planning and engage with the ecosystem team, what I've been really challenging myself and my team to look at is how do we get inputs faster? How do we understand what the pulse is of the market, what the needs are of the customers, what the ecosystem wants? So we've been moving towards continuous planning. So whereas before we may have had specific windows of opportunity where we would analyze data, we would understand the needs of the market, and then transfer that with the program management team, work with the program management teams, we are really redefining our processes of how we engage with customers and partners and planning. So we're constantly getting feedback. That meant redesigning completely some of our processes, our procedures, our data inputs, our BI, so the ways we're actually analyzing the data, so we could analyze it quickly and effectively to be more agile and flexible. And it's a journey for us, but you'll probably see we're more engaged doing more continuous planning now to understand what the market needs are, what can be put into our next release or the releases after, but really better understanding the market and market dynamics. So that's a change I've instigated to try to ensure that we stay more flexible, more adaptable, and can really stay on top of the market.
That's great. So what I'd love to do now is we're going to ask the folks in the red shirts to fan themselves out, and I would like to hear from you folks. What's on your mind? What kind of questions do you have for this panel? What kind of discussion topics would you like to go into? Do I have any takers? Ah, we have a taker right here. Yeah, so they can see you. That would be great.
Oh, we're fanned out too much.
In a male-dominated field, just professionally, some of your own personal stories or struggles or how you overcame them.
Can I?
Is that question clear? Still wide open, but clear.
Yeah. Can I actually?
So,
my experience is not really about a work where it was fully male-dominated. However, it was predominantly male members in the team, and when I made a shift to being a lead in the management role, I was the only woman in that team. And they had worked together, they had camaraderie built, and they had some meeting processes and stuff that were like not very conducive for women. It was quite a bit of a challenging change. However, I think what helped me was understanding each person individually on what their where they're coming from helped a lot. And I have to say that it takes two sides to make it work. And some of my male colleagues actually did slow down, and they basically started making changes. And I think Microsoft is a great place that way, where they actually do try and accommodate wherever they could. That said, yes, in a meeting, a lot of times I have to sit right in the middle of a series of foul words, and then some mannerisms and some, usages that I was not used to. But eventually it took like 3 or 4 months for me to get the rhythm of what is being done and bring it all back to the channel of focusing on the results, and that worked. And it took a bit of time, though.
Do you want to jump in?
I can say something quickly. So I think across my career, Microsoft as well as other companies, I think I've been one of the few women in the roles that I've had, or a lot of times I'm the only woman in the room. And I've gotten used to that. I think even going through engineering school, sometimes I was the only woman in the classroom. And there have been times when it can be a disadvantage, or there's perceptions that are at play. One of the things that I remember, one of the first exec meetings I had with a partner when I was working at Microsoft, I walked in to greet the executives and they asked me for coffee. Can you bring me coffee? It's changing perceptions and stereotypes, though, along the way. I think there's been a saying that if you want to get to the C-level, or if you want to get to be an executive, don't bake, or don't bring coffee, or don't bring donuts. But it's really about managing your style and staying true to yourself. Oftentimes in meetings, and I don't know if the rest of you at Microsoft have seen this, there are some men who are very outspoken. And it's you need to know that it's okay to maintain your personality and be yourself and still be able to share a point of view. You don't have to change yourself in order to be successful. When you do try to change yourself and be something you're not, oftentimes you cause more stress in your life. So it's oftentimes sharing your point of view. Sometimes it means more impact and influence. Women tend to be better collaborators. So I know a lot of what my organization does is I bring a lot of different teams together, whether it be external customers or partners or internal customers or partners, different product teams, marketing. But it's bringing all those people together to have more impact. And that's a trait that I have. And so it's managing my strengths as opposed to trying to be something I'm not.
And just to build upon that, I think as women, we bring something different to the table. And you just gotta accept that and take advantage of it. Don't be shy of it. Own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would add that in the years of being in rooms where I'm the only female, there's a very interesting aspect to that. My voice is different. Mm-hmm. And when I talk, the room quiets and they listen. And I've seen that repeatedly through the years. So there's something to take advantage of there.
The only thing I would add to that is I think women do a great job maybe of forming their relationships in a one-on-one nature, in one-on-one meetings, and men tend to form their relationships around the conference room table. And Forrester did a really interesting study on this a couple of years ago, and that's okay. And oftentimes, like Natalia said, if I have a big meeting where I need something, I make sure I understand who the men at the table are who are going to help me, and make sure those one-on-one relationships are prepared to be my supporters in the room, and that just helps build my confidence tremendously.
Great. Other questions? Here we have one over here. She'll be right down with the mic.
Thank you. It works. I just wanted to ask you the role of mentors, right? So not only mentors who are men, which might be there, but as well mentors of women. Things have moved along since the 80s when I started out. So it must be that there are more women there to mentor other women. And how has that helped with your career?
What? Yeah, I think I can personally vouch for that. Mm-hmm. Natalia has been a great mentor, and it's had a very, very positive change. It does help to have more than one mentor at times, one in your own peer group, and that could be a man or a lady, and that gives different perspectives for you to pick on. And as men and women, we do have completely different perspectives on how we want to get something done, and it really helps you get both perspectives. And having a mentor like Natalia, who is in a similar industry, who's gone through a lot of different changes, has a lot of experience, really helps a lot. And I do know, at least when I instigated the changes, I knew at least some idea on what I was getting into. And that really helped.
And I personally, I've had two mentors. I had purposely one woman and one man. Because it also helps, not just because of their different perspective, but also you are driving change yourself. You are bringing to that mentor a perspective that he doesn't get maybe from a male mentee. Mm-hmm. And then you are helping to drive change and from the way up. And then he says, well, I never thought of it that way. And then it kind of trickles down as well. So it's kind of like sharing the love type of thing and sharing the knowledge. So it has personally worked for me that way.
I would say, too, that there's been some recent, in the past couple of years, discussion of sponsorship versus mentorship, and that's something that I think is really interesting. So the notion of a sponsor is someone who doesn't, so there was a study by, I think, Catalyst that talked about the notion that, women are very well mentored. Like, as a group, we get ourselves some mentors and we go get mentored, right? That's something that happens. But what we often lack is we don't have somebody sponsoring us at a slightly higher level. So it's a higher level person who's kind of looking out for you. And when you're not in the room, but you need a voice to say, this person would be great to do this job, or, you know, let's consider this person for this opportunity. They're the person who jumps in and helps with that. And so finding those people, every time I've moved up in my career, it's been because I've had a strong sponsor, male or female.
And the thing about that also is that they say that you can choose a mentor, but a sponsor chooses you. So you gotta establish those relationships first to be able to get a sponsor that will vouch for you.
We have a question here, and there's one back there next.
Yep.
Following up on the first question and the second question, I have a daughter in high school, and we're doing our college orientation for engineering, and she is the only girl in the room. I mean, in a gymnasium full of people, she's picking out the other girls, and they're less than 10. Is Microsoft and the women at Microsoft, are they doing any outreach to girls at high school?
Why don't we start?
So, I don't know all of the outreach programs, but I know we are we really invest in DigiGirls. We actually go out to a lot of the high schools in the region, as well as, I think, across the nation, across the globe, we do that as well. So we're constantly looking at ways to invest in women, especially at an education level, from the middle school level through high school and even in college. You know, from a professional standpoint, many of us have participated in Grace Hopper's, so we're actively participating there, Society of Women Engineers. So there's a lot of women in technology groups that we also participate in to ensure that we are attracting the women, to make sure that they're looking at ways to participate. And there's also Ignite. I think the Ignite Foundation is another one that's a great way to actually encourage girls to participate in the technology in a very young age, I think starting at middle school as well. Are there other ones that I missed?
So there is a high school intern program as well at Microsoft.
Yeah.
In my previous team, we actually used to take high school interns, boys and girls, and we trained them for in computer science engineering. We gave them small tools to develop. We have a mentor assigned to them. And then at the end of it, they get to make a decision on whether they want to pursue this as a career or not. And there are such programs in many teams within Microsoft.
I think we've determined that it is absolutely a problem where you have to fill the pipe because the pipe is not being filled, and then we have to stop the attrition out of the pipe once they're in career, because there's heavier attrition with women than there are men at, you know, at certain levels in particular. So we're going at it from both angles, absolutely, as a company, and there are programs aimed along the pipe everywhere.
And I think we do it not just because, oh, we want more women in. We actually see the value of women. If 50%+ of our customers are women, why wouldn't we want women helping develop the product? And so it's a business, you know, as well as, you know, caring about, you know, women in general. And that's true across minorities in general, not just women.
Yeah, it's the value of diversity.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a woman back there. Yep.
I have a question. Going back to the topic of change, and you spoke about personal and organizational changes that you've gone through. I've noticed that some people, whenever changes are coming fast and quick, they stagnate and other people thrive. Do you have any suggestions on how to improve your personal agility to respond to change, whether it's something that you brought on of your own or something that's come in externally?
Go for it, Claire.
I think it's a great question. Thank you for asking it. You know, how do I stay relevant, balance my life, and so forth? I think, first of all, when you see an opportunity and having the passion, make sure it's a passion from you really care about this, not because it's obligatory. I think, first of all, you having a genuine interest, I want to do this, is step one to success. And then step two is remember, you know, how are you going to learn on that process? And don't expect to be expert day one. But really saying, I'm going to go into this, and I've got a great opportunity to learn. And that passion fuels your desire to learn. And I think those two things are so important to doing that, and not just, oh, I see the world going here, I want to do that. So it should come from, I care about this, and I want to do this.
I would say, sort of to add to that, that it's very much about you have to love the process for getting there, and that if you look at people who are really great at what they do, they don't do it because they want to move up the career ladder or whatever, but that they really love that particular thing that they're doing, and sort of the other stuff comes afterwards. One of the things that's really interesting to me is you'll notice that, you know, if you talk to someone who's had a very successful career, they very frequently tell you what sounds like a straight route up to it. And somebody once told me that you should realize that careers aren't really ladders, right? They're sort of networks, and that a lot of times it only looks like a straight route because they've sort of reframed the story from the end point of leading to there, whereas when you're actually making the switch, right, you don't know when you take the sideways move, is it actually gonna be a bump up, is it gonna be a sideways move? But if you love the process, that doesn't matter, right? You're following that, and then you can reframe it yourself when you come back and say it all led to this.
Yeah, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it's sort of to what... Yeah, so the question was sort of to the same point, if you made one of these lateral moves or you took a jump somewhere and then you realized, ooh, that wasn't really the right thing to do, how did you come back? And I think a lot of it, I mean, there's so many different answers to that, right? But one is if you've got a strong network of people that you know, you have sort of a safety net when you jump someplace. If you come back and talk to them later and go, yeah, I thought I was gonna be awesome in this role and it just turned out that it's not the right one for me, they will help you sort of move back into the fold of where you want to be. A large company like Microsoft is perfect for this because, you know, you can kind of jump around and try different things, but I realize not everybody has that particular safety net. But, you know, there's a lot of ways where you can kind of jump from place.
But even without a large network like Microsoft, there's LinkedIn. It's yes. Always maintaining your network of interactions. I know I think I have over 600 LinkedIn people, and that's a lot. But it's grown organically because a lot of the people I've worked with, I've stayed in contact with. And so I have this different network that's grown, and people are across the globe at various different companies. In the beginning, it was very small, and it felt a little incestuous. They kept going to the same companies, but then it grew, and it's maintaining that connection so people recognize the value that you provide in your different roles. So if you need to make a change, you have those opportunities because you've created those networks.
I'd even say that they could help pull you out to recognize that you need a change. When you have those networks, they can be refreshing and kind of outside perspective for you. So. We had, this woman's been waiting. She's up, you're next. And then please over here, we have some, so we'll want to go over there with the mics. So we'll do these two up to there, you'll move over, and we'll go up there. Okay.
Wow, good organizing.
All right.
I wanted to jump back to the conversation about encouraging and enabling girls that are potentially interested in programming. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Teaching Kids Programming. You may know Lynn Langett, who started it with Llewellyn Falco. They've created this program that really makes it easy to teach kids programming. They're doing it. They're going all over the world doing it. So I've seen it in action. They did it where I live. But it's a guy and a girl, you know, man and a woman, both experts. So having, when the schools know that they're coming in and the girls can see that, you know, here's something that there's a woman teaching it. I belong there. So not only are they doing it, but they've built it in a way that they've kind of aimed it so that people who are developers can teach their own kids also. And they're teaching, helping other people learn so they can bring the program into other schools. Lynn's 14-year-old daughter is teaching it. So it's, you know, it's just another way. I mean, it's just great to enable children, you know, boys or girls, but I think the fact, you know, having a woman come in there doing it and girls in the school seeing that, it's really powerful for them.
Thank you so much for sharing that. We'll go up to the front here, and then that's next. Yep.
Well, I work for an organization that is very attractive. It's a great organization, but we have difficulty recruiting women. And I'm wondering if you have any insights on, you mentioned mentoring, we're talking a lot about that, but how can we attract more women to the organization?
So I can take it when you guys can add on, but a couple of things that we've done that's been successful. So my organization started out and I had almost predominantly all males. I've grown my organization now where I've attracted a lot of women to the organization and it's grown. And I think in part it's one, more women will attract women, so you have to always keep that into consideration. But there's simple things that you can do in the process when you're actually recruiting women. Make sure that you're a part of the interview loops. So you participate, so they see another familiar face and they know that they're not the only one, the lone soldier that's there in the company. And that makes a big difference. If you have, I don't know if you have a women's organization within your company, you could even do something as simple as having monthly women's lunches. But again, it encourages then the collaboration. It encourages, you have community and you want to encourage that community. But simple things like that can make a difference. Other things that women look at when they're going into different companies is the culture. So again, identifying what are the things that they're looking for. Are they looking for flexibility? And if your company offers that, make sure when you speak to them in the interviews that you talk about either the flexibility that your company offers or the things that may want to attract them.
I would add that as women who love your careers, who love what you do, be visible. You may have seen the keynote yesterday. I was in the keynote. I had no desire to be in that keynote. I wanted to be in that keynote about as much as I wanted a root canal yesterday. But you know, somebody pulled me aside and said, it's really hard for us to show women if we don't show women. And so take a risk, put yourself out there, and show women how much fun we have in our jobs.
Yep. You did great.
I didn't need you guys to do that. That was embarrassing.
I'm going to go back.
Hi, I went from a developer position to a management position, and I was very comfortable as a woman in technology as a developer, but being a woman in technology managing has been a difficult transition, and sometimes I just feel alone out there. Is there any resources for women in management in IT?
I don't know. I don't know if there's any, like, for management generally, there's just management resources, ways to make you a better manager. I don't know if there's specific tools for women to be managers, because I think it transcends sex when you're looking at management skills and management opportunities. So I found for myself that when I became a lead, then I became a manager of managers. A lot of that for me was growing my management skills, learning to run an organization at scale, understanding the dynamics, looking at the cultures. Part of it is being inclusive. Part of it is knowing what your place is at the table around your peers. So it gets back to your peers at your different peer level. But I don't know if there's specific differences when you're looking at management. I think the skills tend to be the same. And I don't know if anybody else has different experiences.
Well, I would say that I agree that they're probably the same, and that I haven't seen sort of women-specific items. But there was, I was in management for a brief while before I switched roles into a program manager position. And I found that as I moved into management, and I think when I talked to other people who were kind of going through the same transition, just realize it's a hard transition, right? I mean, and it's kind of lonely, I found, when I first went into management, because you're used to kind of hanging out with sort of to the different peers group. You're used to hanging out with your peers, and all of a sudden they may be reporting to you, and that's a different experience. And so you have to sort of go make a new peer group and actually build it. It's not just there to join. But just kind of know that you're not alone in that. Maybe that's helpful.
Yeah, and also the same. Also the same principles apply, right? Now that you've moved up, it's even a better chance for you to start networking with management and say and try to find a sponsor or a mentor, right? And that's where it, still all of the needs still apply. That won't change. I mean, probably the people and the faces will change, but the needs won't.
Yeah, and I'd like to add on, when I moved into management role, that was a team where everyone, I was the first woman to join the team, and I joined in a management role, so it was very difficult having to adjust first in a team where there is no other women, and to, manage the team. It's not easy, but I was actually, I had a good mentor in the team who used to be the manager of that team, and he basically, it's going to be his shoes that I was going to fill. So what worked was I basically sat with him, found out how he does things, what he does, what works for the team, you know, understand the strengths and weaknesses of the team, and that really helped in gaining the trust of the team that, you know, I'm there to do something that is good for them.
Thanks. We have one over in that corner, yes.
Hi. I've been in IT for about 18 years, and I started out in desk side, and over the years I've become really specialized. I'm a messaging engineer. And, you know, you're all talking about, you know, oh, well, I decided to make a quality of life change and, you know, be able to spend more time with my family and things like that. But when you get into the, you know, where the strata where I am of, you know, engineering and stuff like that, I mean, that's a complete boys club. But I'm wondering, how do you get to where you can make that change? Like, I mean, we don't all have the opportunity to say, oh, well, I'm just going to do something else now, because I was laid off at one point and I found that there really weren't any other, you know, skills that I was fitted for, you know, when I was interviewing for jobs. So, I mean, I was wondering if you have any resources or advice on, you know, how do you get out of that pigeonhole if you're in, you know, a very specialized technology and at a high level, you know, technically, and transition to a more like people-oriented position and, you know, that type of thing.
I would say some of it is taking on some small roles before, like, don't try to change everything at once, right? So if you're in a very sort of narrow discipline and, you know, you go interview for jobs that are completely separate from that, very different skills, that's going to be pretty challenging, I would think. But, you know, the times that I've made career switches, I've always started by taking sort of little baby steps first. So when I first moved into management, right, I was first a team lead on that project. And so, yes, you didn't have people management, but there were sort of project management skills which were transferable. And then I could go to the next step and say, look, I've done this, and now I want to move into management, and look, I've proved myself in this area. Same thing for when I moved into program management from documentation. I could do some projects where I had help systems, for example, that I got integrated into particular products, and I could come and say, you know, I know this technology already, I've written for it, but you also know that I can do program management work because I have manager background and I have, you know, these skills that I've done around help systems, which are very similar to driving a feature from beginning to end. So I would say, you know, try to gradually get those skills that you think are in the direction you want to go, and you also along the way find out whether you actually like them, right? A lot of times roles look more attractive before you actually start doing them, and then if you start trying that project, you may realize you love your area more than you realized, and maybe you want to go someplace else with it.
And your network also is a great resource, right? This is when you can tap to them and say, sit with somebody who you think is a job that might interest you and say, what is this about? What is it that you like about it? What is it that you don't like about it? Would you recommend it for somebody like me? These are my skills. These are my aspirations. This is what I think my potential is. Do you think it would be a fit? You know, try to have that conversation with somebody that probably is going the way that you might want to go as well, and that has been there for a while. That's a perfect example of networking resources.
I also think taking a core inventory of your core strengths and your core skills, so when you're looking for that next opportunity, whether it's actually the interview process or just your networking, understand that you're coming with a great skill set. Mm-hmm. And make sure the person you're talking to, you know, appreciates that, because they're going to hire you because of that core skill strength. So when you're in that new role for 6 or 7 months, you may not have everything you need, but they hired you because of your core skill strength. And so it's really a confidence booster in a lot of ways. You said you were in engineering. The DevOps world right now is a whole new world that's just growing and transformational. We could definitely use people like you in that, right? And how does this convergence of dev and ops come together? It's we don't have enough people who understand that, you know, and so there's great opportunities there right now.
Okay, okay, well, over here, and then we'll do that.
Hi, a quick comment and then a question, but I have to, given the topic change, I have to start off with the man's prayer that comes from Red Green, a Canadian comedy show. It goes, I'm a man, and I can change. if I have to, I guess.
Yay.
Very nice. Yeah.
This is my first tech ed, and for some reason, it being a Microsoft convention, I was expecting a much higher percentage of women here, mm-hmm. And I was actually just kind of shocked at the low percentage. I heard it's 5%, and I was actually surprised it was that high, because my perception was it was even lower than that. So my question is, what kind of change do you think is necessary to increase that percentage to something at least approaching what's in industry?
Yeah, we've been.
Go for it. We've got an answer in the audience.
We have a very high percentage of women in our company, and they always are like, why do you get to go? And I said, I asked. It's real simple, ask. And a lot of times your boss will say, really, what's the value? Justify it, and you're here.
I also think there's a little shift in the industry going on. If you look at the roles in the room and the roles that this conference represents, the evolving of the role is to become more of, you know, I think about the data center specifically. Well, you're going to bring more and more kind of business skills into that, analytics skills into it, as you know, as we think about hardware and convergence coming together and that coming together. And women are going to be super powerful in that. You know, I call it the next generation MBA of IT. And it's, so there's some opening and changes coming that I think will also foster that. So I think there's some really cool times ahead of us on that.
Nobody in our group, and we have 170 employees in our technology group, and nobody was going. I found out about this through a friend who works for Microsoft. And so I asked. I was scheduled to go to UB Tech next week in Orlando, and I asked my boss, this looks more relevant. But also, if you look on the webpage, they actually give you a set of things in order to convince your boss to go. And that's what I did. I printed it out. I sat down and said, hey, rather than going to UB Tech.
It works.
Rather than going to UB Tech with you next week and another senior manager, I would prefer to go to this, and convinced him. I looked at the price. I was like, ooh. So, but the admin said, hey, the other guys get to go, and their conferences cost the same price. So as a result of that, I was the only one going. And as you see, Matt is here with me. He's one of our middle managers. Mm-hmm. And we have two other people. So two other of the guys came along. So I started it.
Yeah. Think you want to share as well? Yeah?
As someone who speaks at, I also speak at conferences, I'm speaking here too. I also think one of the big things is in making women want to come to conferences. That's why I stick my neck out to speak. That's why you push yourself to be on the keynote. Not only for the women, you know, for the people who are here, but then there's going to be pictures, and then next year when somebody, you know, somebody's looking at the website and looking, oh, it's all for men, you know, I don't want to go. They're going to see more women and more women and more women and go, oh, I belong there and want to come. So I think I am a huge believer. I mean, I am not that comfortable presenting, but I do it all the time and all over the world, and that's one of the big reasons I do it, just to, you know, be I think the visibility is huge.
Thanks. I know you want to add something as well.
I just would like to say that a lot of women don't come because they cannot find babysitters. No. Get your husbands to babysit. Get someone. Your kids will survive without a week.
And you get a nice break.
I just had a comment for the woman in the back that was talking about transitioning from engineering. I had a similar path. I started in help desk, became a desktop technician, became manager of our IT services department, and along the way was always seemed to be training people, and made that transition to become a Microsoft certified trainer. So that's something else that you should consider, that you can always take your skill set, whatever it is that you know, whatever technology it is, and be able to train. Then you get back to working with people, and that's what I do. I train about 1,600 employees. You can also be part of a community called the MCT Ambassadors here at TechEd, get to know Microsoft Learning, then you build your network. And we have quite a few women that are MCT ambassadors here or working hands-on labs at this event. And it's a great community.
I read a thing and it said, the reason men get promoted is because they ask. The reason women don't is because they don't. If you see a job and you're like, don't say, wow, I would really like to be considered for that job. Write your boss and say, I want that job and this is why I deserve it.
Okay, we're going to go to the back.
So I wanted to address, someone was asking about encouraging girls in high school toward engineering careers. Someone on the panel mentioned the Ignite program that started in the Seattle School District, but it's international. So if you're not in the Seattle area, you can go to the ignite-us.org website, and there are kits for starting Ignite chapters in your own communities. And this links women in technical professions with girls in high school for mentoring and guiding them and helping them along. It's a wonderful program. It's been very, very successful. One of the girls who job shadowed me then ended up at Expedia, for example, and a terrific program. But the questions that I have, a couple of them, as someone who left Microsoft a few years ago after a 20-year career, I'm curious specifically what you see as the causes of attrition of women in the industry and the specifics of what's being done to address that. And I shouldn't ask a two-part question, but I'm going to anyway. Have you dealt with ugly political situations at any point, and how did you deal with it?
So it is very known and documented that women leave the industry to go take care of family, and then they don't come back because they don't stay in touch with work, and they are then intimidated by the hurdle to get back in. And that's quite a bit of writing about that is kind of interesting. There are companies that have built very specific programs, and we've actually worked on that at Microsoft as well, to keep the connection with women as they, quote, retire or leave, and keep a community going so that the on-ramp back into the company is there, the network back in is there, and that, you know, that sense of the you know, the big boulder to push to get there is less so. So I know a number of companies, financial industry is actually very strong in programs like this. We do have one. It's something to think about. Very easy to get going, even informally in a company. HR, you know, usually jumps at the opportunity if they have a sponsor for it. So I will put that out there as something I've seen.
No, and I would echo Stephanie's comments. I think a lot of it is the ability to on-ramp people back, mm-hmm. and keeping that network is really critical in how we do that. And I've seen that even within my organization. There's been some attrition at a certain level band, and it's usually when people are starting to have a family or need to take care of a family. Mm-hmm. And maintaining the connections can help you bring them back in. I know from a personal story perspective, my sister, who was living in Chicago, she actually left work for several years because her infant son got really sick. So she left for 2 or 3 years, but she kept in touch with her employer, and through a leadership development program, they brought her back in 2 years later. And now she's at a CX level. So she's done very well, but part of it was maintaining that connection and maintaining that network and ensuring that she kept connected with them.
The second part of your question was the politics question. And yes, I've seen it. I think we all have. I think most of it is non-intentional. I think if you see it happening and you go and have a conversation and say, I think I'm seeing something here, I think people are so appreciative of that conversation. I don't think it's intentional. I think they're wanting to learn. They're wanting awareness. And so I think that, you know, having the ability to say, you know, this doesn't feel like, I think we could do better, and here's the perception I'm receiving from this, is so helpful just to open the door and move through it quickly.
And to your point, Claire, I think this is some advice that I was going to give anyway. So part of it is really looking at when you're in a situation where you feel it's highly politically charged, a lot of it is assume good intentions. If you assume malicious intentions, you can get very defensive, and your reactions won't be where they need to be. You'll see ghosts where they're not there. You will see things that aren't there and start scheming. So really, you need to assume there's good intent and actually go to your leaders or go to the other people and talk to them. And if you start from that basis, you can usually get to a very collaborative discussion and work through it.
Thanks. We're going to, in the interest of time, we're going to take two more questions, one, two, and then we're going to do a wrap because we are all the way at one end of this place, and I know people have to get to other places. So we'll try to get you out. I don't want to keep you over time. So let's take this question and that question, and then we'll have a few more comments. Yeah.
I have a quick question. Have either of you dealt with situations where you've been at the table with male counterparts and you've brought an idea to the table and it's been somewhat resistant, and then another man at the same table in the same conversation can say the same thing and everybody agrees with it? And if so, how have you dealt with that? And also, as it relates to frustrations, a man can yell at the table and everybody just pipes down and they react totally different. But when a woman yells, it's like, oh, she's super emotional. So have you dealt with that, and how have you dealt with it?
So I would say one of the things that I have noticed about the man saying the idea later is you can actually do the same thing in reverse. So I'm not sure that I believe that that's a male-female thing as much of a like last writer wins. Because I know that I've done that inadvertently before, where someone was like, hey, that was my idea, and you just reset it. And I said, oh, I was so excited about it. So sort of to the assuming good intent, I would try in situations like that. Sometimes I've just called people on it and said, I said that 5 minutes ago. And if you say it with a smile and not like you're really angry, but just like, I caught you, it usually goes over fine. I agree about the yelling. Like, it's the case that it's definitely easier for men to sort of raise their voices. Although a lot of times I've found that if I need to raise my voice, as long as I lower my pitch and I don't like express anger in my face and in my hands, I can frequently kind of get the attention of the room with that. So it kind of depends.
I guess there are certain skills that you have to learn, right, when you communicate. And one of the things that I learned at Microsoft is know your audience. How do they listen? Because everybody has different styles of communication, and trying to understand your audience or be prepared for that, not just on what you are trying to say or preparing your speech, so to speak, but also understand who is your target audience, and trying to understand that and say, okay, maybe you can later, if something didn't go through, then try to talk to them, not in a very, not in a confrontational way at all, but just trying to understand your audience. Okay, so what makes him tick? What is he open to? Anything, trying to understand that person and see, okay, maybe if I pitch it in a different way, maybe he'll understand that and just say, oh, he's more receptive now. So trying different styles, but all I would say ultimately try to learn your audience first.
Yeah, I would add on to that. One thing that I usually do is if I know I'm going to propose an idea, I usually identify the target audience and go talk to them before the meeting.
The preview.
That way, one, I don't get, I don't have surprise people or people who want to oppose shouting at me at the meeting. And second, it kind of preempts anybody claiming the idea to be their own. And a lot of times it has actually worked. And I don't believe it's a men-women thing, because this suggestion was given to me by my manager, who is a guy, and it works for him as well.
Okay, we'll have this question.
Okay, here's my question. I love what I do. I love where I am, but I'm starting to feel stuck. I've looked at certification, but certification's cost prohibitive. So what other ways can I progress in my career? What other things can I do to move forward?
Technical readiness.
Yes, you can. You can.
One of the things we're trying to improve is technical readiness and how to make it more accessible and what's the right path. We are clearly at an inflection point where there's new skills that have to be, gathered and so forth. So on a very practical perspective, Microsoft has the Microsoft Virtual Academy. Go visit MSL And a lot of that is free. You do not have to pay to take a class. You do not have to pay classes to go take the certification tests. When you come to conferences, and again, MSL is probably here and represented, oftentimes they have discounted classes. If you want to jump on to a beta certification, you can take it for free. And there, you have to take twice as many questions. But if you get 50% right, you get a pass. So there are inexpensive ways to get there. You do not have to do it. But I'd love to talk to you offline, maybe. I don't know if I have time, I have to go to another thing, but let's change emails at least, because we want to get more creative in this space. We want to make technical readiness and technical learning a lot more accessible and more interesting. So, but we have a lot of options there. But to definitely go check out our Jumpstart series and our Microsoft Virtual Academy. We just have a huge amount of curriculum there.
And I think you want to add something to this, correct?
That's a great point.
That you can really meet a lot of people who share your desire to move ahead and also share your excitement. And maybe that's part of it, is feeling stuck. Sometimes you don't have the peers or the, you know, colleagues that you can really share with. And if you go beyond that into the community, there are just wonderful people there. So I would really suggest that. Sure. I spoke about the opportunities in speaking to user groups. And it doesn't mean, you know, there's such a diversity of user groups. So it could be C#, it could be .NET, it could be, you know, some kind of an IT user group. But definitely that's a wonderful place to network. And if you don't have peers that you can really share your passion with, that's a great way to feel more rewarded and validated.
Thanks. Thanks for adding. So what I thought we'd do is, as a wrap-up, I'd like to go down the panel and ask them to leave you with some words of advice on managing change. Maybe something someone gave to them at some point, maybe something they've learned. And we'll kind of start with you and move on down.
Thank you, Stephanie. So the one advice that has actually helped me a lot throughout my career is, be yourself, but keep setting expectations, prioritizing as you go, because priorities change. There are a lot of changes that will be forced on you, that you might be forced to make, but setting the expectations always work. You kind of let people know what to expect from you, and there are no surprises and shocks at the end of the line, and that's been a great advice, and it's worked for me so far. That said, I'm sorry, I have to run to a session. I'm speaking at a session at the far end of the convention center. So I'll have to make this change now and run.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll pick up with you, Cecilia.
So one of the best advices that I got was from my test manager when I was going through a little bit of a rough time trying to understand the feedback that was being given to me. What I changed was my style of communication, and what I understood was, well, does that mean I have to change myself? Am I coming too strong? Is my personality wrong? What is pissing people off about me? But he said, it's not you. Don't take it personally. It's the way maybe you communicate that has to change. And what I changed was basically to talk less and listen more. Instead of trying to defend my position, I just zipped it and just listened. And then I understood what the other person had to say. And sometimes they were right, sometimes they were wrong. I was still on the right, but the way I approached it was very different, because I actually made the other person feel that they were listening. Basically, I was paying attention to what they had to say. And sometimes that's all they want. They just want to express their opinion, want to share something. You don't have to get defensive about it. And that change, you have no idea how much this changed my career. Being able to just listen, take a step back, and stop being defensive about feedback. It was like the biggest career change and the most positive change that I've had so far.
Thank you.
I would say for me, the thing that somebody once told me was
to really be careful of the stories that you tell. So all of us, when we walk around and we talk to people, we're always sort of telling a story, right? And there's a great book called Made to Stick, which actually talks about how you use stories to sell things and make ideas sticky to people. And those stories that you tell, you can really use them to cause change. So I've had times where I've gone and talked to people, and I've sort of told them a story about how I thought the world ought to be. And I was really amazed where a couple months later, sort of the world had shifted and met the story that I told. It was almost like magic, right? And I would say one of the things to realize is that that's often different than the formal processes of change that you see. So I heard a story once about marketing, where there were two marketing guys that had just been hired. And one of them sort of always told the story about how he wanted to go overseas some days, and he was learning like a new language, and he was really interested in it. And when an opportunity came up that they could send somebody to Tokyo for a 3-month stint, they sent the guy who'd been talking about how he wanted to be overseas and maybe live overseas some days. And the other guy went to the management team and said, well, why didn't you offer this position to me? And they said, well, we didn't think you'd be interested because you never talked about it. Like, you never told us that this was an interest of yours. And, you know, you have a young family, and we thought maybe it wasn't the right time for you. So just really be aware of the stories that you're telling and tell the ones that you want people to change to.
Okay, so for me, I think there's a couple of things that I look at. One is change can be really scary a lot of times because you feel like you're out of control. So one of the biggest things for me has always been understanding then what I can control and then what I can't. What are those variables that I can't? And then being very intentional then on the things that I can do as well as those that I can't do or won't do, and prioritizing those. So that's been really critical for me in embracing change, because then I felt like I have some control and I can actually manage through it. Before, I felt like it was completely out of my hands. The other advice that I actually got from our previous president of Server and Tools was, Bob Muglia, was, again, assume good intent. And that's one of the key foundations a lot of times as you're going through either change, politics, everything else. People are always moving fast. A lot of times they're doing things that they think are going to better either the company or the relationship, and they may not see your point of view. So if you start from that basis that their intentions are good, what they're trying to accomplish may benefit the company, but it's a different lens, then you can go into it and be more collaborative. Versus if you assume bad intent, again, you can get very combative and defensive. So that's been a key thing that stuck with me for years.
Those are all really wonderful. I think I said a little bit before, understanding as you enter this change, whether it was planned or unplanned, your core strengths really helps you have that confidence as you navigate the change. And then enter the change with curiosity, a desire to learn. You're going to meet new people. Who are these people? How can I get better at my job? Because Jonabee brings something really cool to it. I get to know her. I get to know her strengths. I get to know the folks around me. So that curiosity of expanding your network, doing better work for the company, learning on your own, I think is just a really nice way. And also patience. I hire a lot of new people, and it's always really sweet to see somebody young and ready, and they think they have to prove themselves day one in the first meeting. And so patience, and just be in that kind of watching, observing, listening mode, knowing your core strengths, you'll know when to use them. And so I think it's just that, you know, be ready and enjoy it.
Well, thank you, panel, for those words and all of the words. And I want to thank you, the attendees. We had some fun. You helped each other. I love that you stood up and gave each other answers. I'd ask you to go seek each other out. I hope you exchanged emails. And tell people about TechEd. Tell women about TechEd. And tell them how easy it is to get here if they ask. Okay? Thank you.